The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Total Engagement with Matt Coon on the MLW Radio Network.
This is the theme to my new show. The theme to my new show. Core Power called me up and said that I can have my own thing. It's almost halfway finished. How do you like it so far? How do you like the theme to my new show? When I was 10, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for Hulkamania and Starrcade 1. We cared who won. On the pay-per-view sold. When I was 10 years old.
Woke up this morning, got myself a show.
Fuck this, let's start the show.
Welcome to the debut episode of Total Engagement with Matt Coon. Now, if you tune in to hear this, thank you so much. If you tune in to hear why it ended, give this show a shot. Robbie's not here. We all miss him, but it's a different show. We still have a great interview, a lot of cool stuff going on. I don't think there's ever been a show like this one. And thank you to MLW Radio and Court Bauer for giving this guy here a chance at his own show. So what do we got going on today? We have a great interview with Joey Ryan. Joey is a really interesting guy. He's got the character everybody knows, but the guy behind the guy, I think, is super interesting. We got some hate tweets as read by children, and I take one of my employees aside and I show him something, wrestling. He's not a fan, but I show him Hangman Page versus Joey Ryan. And also, we have an anonymous source within the Fed, current talent, this isn't a joke, this isn't fake, this is real, that I asked a couple tough questions to, and we got some answers. But that's not all. We also have what I love and what I don't love about wrestling today with a special guest this week you might know. His name is D'Lo Brown. And then we have a segment called Yes or No with Johnny Fairplay. Lots of cool people, lots of cool stuff, a different kind of show, and it's jam-packed. So let's get started now. Total Engagement. All right, guys, we're joined for our very first segment of Ask a Legend, and we're going to ask what they think of wrestling today. Something good, something bad, because everybody wants to say something bad, but we're going to say something good. We're joined today by the man, the myth, D'Lo Brown. How are you doing today, D'Lo?
What's up, dog? How you been today?
I'm doing really good, man. And I appreciate you agreeing to do this. Are you someone who keeps up with the product?
Yeah, I keep up with the current product. You know, I watch a lot of WWE. I watch a lot of Impact, and I try to dip in the Ring of Honor whenever I can. So I try to keep up with the product as much as I can.
So I'm just want to ask you real quick, just to give everybody kind of the viewpoint of someone who is there at the height of the popularity of wrestling, the height of the coolness of wrestling. You were right there in the midst of it. Something that you hate about wrestling today and something that you love about wrestling today. First of all, let's start with something that you dislike or hate about wrestling today.
I guess the one thing that I can think of that I dislike about today's wrestling is the lack of the boys having creativity and freedom to make mistakes. Back in the Attitude Era, the reason why The Rock got good is because he practiced on live TV and, you know, in his promo styles of things that worked, things that didn't work. And if it didn't work, he cut it out. The things that worked, he added to it and magnified it. It seems like today, a lot of the talent, when they're talking or just reading a pre-prepared script, and nothing comes from them and their heart and their soul. So it doesn't come off as completely believable. And I'm not talking about all talent. I'm talking about there's some out there who just, it doesn't come off as real. It just comes off as lines they're reading. And that's that ability to be creative and make your own mistakes when cutting a promo.
Do you think that lack of creativity or the lack of trust in the talent
is a factor in people maybe being drawn away from WWE, that people might take a little bit less money if they feel a little bit more artistically or creatively engaged?
I could see that. I could see that being an out for people who want to be more creative and more give more input on what their character is or isn't doing. So yeah, I could see that being a draw for someone to want to explore other options.
As far as the talent yourself, how important was that to you, you know, in TNA or in WWE, having your own creative input?
It was tremendous because, you know, no one knows you better than yourself. And no one knows the character you're trying to portray better than yourself. When you sit down with a writer or producer or agent, you give that input, and everybody's on the same page, and now you're not stuck in a situation where you clearly wouldn't do that, or you don't believe in what you're doing. And it helps out when you believe and you feel what you're doing is in the vein of what you want your character to portray.
Yeah, and we talked on Why It Ended about your character, and it's interesting to me how in-depth you thought about that character. Now, it's easy for all of us to sit back and say everything that's wrong. Anybody can say what's wrong. But let's see if we can think about what is something you love, you like, you enjoy about wrestling today.
That's easy. I love the athleticism that is today. These guys today are a million times more athletic than a lot of guys that I was around. I like the fact that they're using the women in a very positive and meaningful position in the company. And this goes across the board in wrestling. And I like that wrestling is starting to grow again. I like that there are new companies springing up. I like there's new performance centers opening up. So it shows that wrestling is trying to grow again to where it needs to be. And I like, and I'm encouraged by what I see there.
As far as the athleticism, it occurs to me that back in the day, you kind of popped off the screen as this big guy who could do a lot of athletic stuff. You know, your kind of hyperextended frog splash and that kind of thing. And then it's pretty common now to see guys like Kevin Owens and guys like that. Do you think you would, D'Lo Brown in his prime, would find a place in today's wrestling?
I think I could fit in today's wrestling in my prime because I was, you know, like you said, a larger guy who did things I wasn't supposed to do. Typically hadn't been done by guys my size. So I think I could find a way in today's product and I think I could be successful. So yeah, I think everybody says that because we all believe in ourselves too much. That's the wrestler's curse. But I think I could fit in today's product.
Hey, before we go, when I interviewed you before, someone asked me something and I wasn't sure. That CPA thing, that thing was legit, right? That wasn't like a character gimmick at all, right?
No, that's very legit. I worked in New York for 2 years for a Fortune 500 company, so that's very legit.
So, D'Lo Brown, thank you for joining us. Before you go, tell us what you're up to now and how people can reach D'Lo Brown or get you for appearances or, you know, reach out to you for any kind of thing right now. And what is it that you're up to?
Well, you can hit me up on Twitter, DLOBrown75. On there is all my booking information. I'm pretty interactive with my fans. I try to talk back as much as possible. And for the most part, I'm out here in Vegas running a school in conjunction with Future Stars of Wrestling, Sim Bodhi, Jake Snake Roberts, called the Snake Pit. And we try to just train guys from the ground up, or if you're an aspiring professional who wants just to get some polish, we've got great promo guys and Jake and you know, I'm a technical guy and Sin is the gimmick guy. So we try to help everyone along any kind of platform, what they're trying to do with their career.
Well, the name of the school and how to get a hold of it. Does it have a website, anything like that?
It's called the Snake Pit and you can get us on Snake Pit, Las Vegas on Facebook.
Awesome, man. And there's absolutely no chance of us not having a beer or having a meal in Vegas during StarCast, but I happen to know we're not going to In-N-Out, right?
We're not going to In-N-Out. Not the biggest fan. Now, if we were in Texas, we'd go to Whataburger all day long.
Well, man, I look forward to seeing you in Vegas for StarCast and Double or Nothing weekend. Thank you so much for joining us, D'Lo. Really appreciate it, man.
My pleasure, dog. Thank you.
Total Engagement.
So, guys, we're here at my music school, and I'm joined by...
Briar.
TJ.
Sailor.
And how old are you guys?
9.
13.
You guys are twins, right?
Yep.
And do I always say nice things about twins?
No.
What are you talking about? what do I always say twins are?
Twins creepy.
Creepy?
Yes.
And why do I say twins are creepy?
Because they are.
Okay, there we go. How long have I been teaching you?
Since 5 years.
Yeah. I don't know exact, but a lot.
I'm going to have you guys read some stuff people have said about me online. Are you guys ready? This one's from the Observer Board.
You lost whatever credibility you had, which was virtually none, by claiming Russo isn't a bad person. He is, you know it, but you are beholden to him and everyone knows it.
And what does it say below that?
P.S. Your moral compass is broken.
Okay.
I think Matt is a good guy, and I also think that one day he will come to regret working with Russo.
And someone made a comment to that. What did they say?
He is not a good person.
All right. Off of Twitter.
Down with Matt Kuhn. There are many ways Vince can make money without that scumbag belly sabotaging all the great things Vince has done.
All right, so this is my life, by the way, outside of here.
Hey, Kuhn, apparently having blank stain blank in your face has cut off your hearing, so you can't tell what a lying sack of blank he is. Poor choice on your part. You're blocked, so you get no more free pub for your horse. Blank off my Twitter.
And who wrote that?
Jim Cornette.
Only a mark like yourself would involve kids so they can have pity for you because they know no better.
Now, can I ask you a question? You guys know me a long time. Do you guys have pity for me?
No.
Okay. So if you're describing me in one word, what would it be, Briar?
Successful.
That is so sweet.
Well, you're very good at teaching music, and that's really all I can think about.
And how about you, Sailor?
Inspiring.
You guys like reading mean things about me? You guys are the worst people I've ever met in my life. All right. Your lesson's about to start. Get out of here.
Total engagement. Now, this is a segment I've been really looking forward to. It's called Ask an Anonymous Talent. This is somebody that you know the name of, and nobody knows that I have any kind of speaking relationship with this person. And I thought about the best way to do this, and voice modulation was out because technology is too good. You can fix it. So what I did is talked to this person on the phone and then transcribed what they said. I asked two questions. With the freedom to speak without retribution, this is a current talent of the company up north. And hopefully it's going to be somebody different every week. So if you're a talent with something you want to say, holler at your boy. So here's the first question I asked. Has All Elite Wrestling and their emergence as a potential competitor had an impact on the working environment of the WWE? Can you explain? The answer is, the boys feel more confident. The office wants us to think AEW has nothing to do with new contracts coming. The second question I asked, was there a general negative, positive or ambivalent feeling about working Saudi Arabia in light of recent headlines? And the answer is, generally, the Saudi show hasn't been looked at as a massive deal. Just another show to most of the boys. Ask an anonymous talent. Total engagement.
And now, everybody's favorite game, Yes or No with Johnny Fairplay. Johnny, a lot of people know the WrestleMania card is kind of shaping up. A lot of different things happening. You might have a triple threat. You've got Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar. A lot of other stuff going on. Maybe Shane versus Miz. So my question is, are you excited about the WrestleMania card?
No.
This has been Yes or No with Johnny Fairplay.
Total engagement.
All right, so I'm here with Adam. Adam, how do you know me?
You are my boss and fellow musician.
You actually kind of are in charge here when I go to these crazy wrestling things, right?
Yes, indeed.
You don't really understand it, right?
No, not a whole lot.
Okay, so what I'm going to show you is, do you remember when I went to Chicago?
Yes, yes.
So I went to Chicago for this thing called All In. I'm going to show you a clip from it, and I just want you to react to it. I'm going to describe it a little bit, and maybe you can too. What are we looking at right now?
It looks like about 12 men dressed as giant penises.
This is 12 men dressed as giant penises. Now,
with balls and all.
Yes. With balls. Now,
they're all huddled together having some sort of dick meeting.
Yeah, they're on the ramp. We're seeing a graphic, and it says Joey Ryan. The guy in the ring, his name's Hangman Page. He is seeing someone come back from the dead, because according to the narrative, he killed him. Now, that's Joey Ryan. What that's do you think it. When you see him? Does he look like a star to you?
Yeah, he looks like a fat Freddie Mercury. Yeah.
The guy in the ring, what do you think of his reaction?
Oh, he's very surprised. He's seeing a dead man.
So he's got a lollipop in his mouth. A lot of times he'll pull it out of his pants, and he will give it to someone in the crowd. And there's Joey Ryan doing his pose.
His little entourage of dicks.
Yeah.
The pink members only jacket on.
The pink.
That's now coming off.
Yeah, and Hangman Page doesn't know quite what to do. I think it's about to go down. What do you think?
It looks like it's coming, yeah. He's greasing himself up.
Is that baby oil?
Yeah, it must be.
Now, when you look at this, is this like a different world to you, or does this is
so strange from anything I've ever seen before in my life.
Now, you see how he opened up his drawers and poured the baby oil down there?
Oh, yeah. He wants plenty of lubrication in that area.
We're going to see one of the most controversial moves in the history of professional wrestling, because Joey Ryan has a superpower, and that's it.
Oh, I see.
It's his dick. So when somebody grabs his dick, look at that. You see how he flexes?
It's just, yeah.
It causes pain.
It's shooting through his whole body right now. This is...
Look at that.
Oh, wow.
So...
He literally just flipped that guy over with his penis.
Do you know what that's called?
No.
The dick flip.
I'm going to have to learn that move. Oh, is he turning him over to the penises?
He's getting turned over to the penises.
They're carrying him off stage.
Like a sacrifice.
Yes. Taking them back to their dick lair to do whatever it is they do.
And Hangman Page is being carried out by the penises. Would you say this was stupid, entertaining, interesting, weird, fucking bizarre?
It's definitely weird and bizarre, but has a strangely artistic sort of viewpoint to it.
If you were to describe what you just saw to somebody, what would you describe it as?
That would take me a minute to really come up with a good explanation of what I just saw.
Fair enough. And I'm going to go ahead and throw right now, because I just got a text, and our interview this week is Joey Ryan.
Total Engagement.
Joining us for our first show is someone who might be called the last independent wrestler in America. He's gone from being one of the founders of PWG to coming back from the dead. He is now the subject of a documentary slated for release in this year called This Is Wrestling. Please welcome, without a doubt, one of the most totally engaging talents on the planet today, Mr. Joey Ryan. Joey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It might be a big thrill for you. I don't know if you've ever been on a wrestling podcast before. Have you ever been on one?
A couple of times.
Yeah. So you've got this documentary coming out. This Is Wrestling. We've been hearing about it for a little bit. We've seen the trailer. And tell us a little bit about it.
A couple of producers on the TV show Bar Rescue are big wrestling fans, and they decided to do a documentary. And they wanted me to be the subject. They thought my story was engaging, and they thought it was cool what I was doing, and the fact that I was traveling the world doing it, and they wanted to tag along for a little bit. So they followed me around for about a year, getting real cool footage that some of the stuff we didn't even really plan. Like, we knew we were going to get the footage with me and Cody Rhodes in the cage match at the Cow Palace, but when they came overseas with me to England and Ireland, we didn't know we were going to get the McFoley footage, which ended up being really cool. And, and then they documented me and Candace teaming up until Candace getting signed and going to NXT. So we got some really cool stuff for the year that they followed me around. They have so much footage, but obviously wanting to be time friendly, they condensed it to, I think they said it's about an hour long, maybe 62 minutes long. So there's going to be, maybe there'll be a lot of B-side or a lot of, B-roll footage to make its way out too. But, it was cool to have them follow me around and kind of get to see a part of my life.
As far as you know, what's the purpose of the documentary? Is it to kind of, highlight the real you so we see this person, or is it about an artistic statement or a cultural statement? Is there any big picture stuff you've been talking about?
Like I said, we really didn't plan too much of it. They approached me cold. I didn't know them. They aren't previous acquaintances of mine. They hit me up, and I don't know if they knew. I mean, obviously they knew who I was, but I don't know if they had an idea of who the real person is, or if they just thought, you know, they were getting the character and they saw the character was out there. But for whatever reason, they chose me and, you know, invited me to lunch one day and, you know, pitched the idea to me. And I thought it sounded cool. And I think they're just wrestling fans, and they were, you know, they're obviously WWE fans like the rest of us are. And then they discovered independent wrestling and thought it was really cool. That a world that not a lot of people get to see, or at least, you know, they hear about it. They don't get to see what goes on behind the scenes or everything that's put into it. And it's just, there's not very many, views of it. You know, people have an idea of how independent wrestling works, but nobody really gets to see how it works unless you're on the inside, you know, like the talent is, but, you know, and I think it was eye opening to them too, as they were filming it. They didn't really, you know, they had an idea of how it worked, but I think when they saw it, you know, firsthand, they really appreciated how much not only effort and travel and scheduling goes into it, but the artistic creativity, the freedoms that we get as independent wrestlers. You know, we're not really micromanaged too badly. You know, a lot of the stuff we do is to our own ideas. You know, we don't really have match agents or, you know, creative telling us how to portray characters. It's all genuine, you know, talent coming up with their own ideas. So I think they were a little bit shocked at how it was too. And they ended up filming more footage than they even really intended to, because I think they got caught up in it too and got, you know, and you know, just carried through and, you know, it turned out to be really cool.
You know, I guess when you think about it, historically independent wrestler has been, you know, something of a, you know, description of a smaller time wrestler, but I guess this documentary being more about maybe you being the product of this rich independent environment maybe enables the word independent wrestler to mean something positive, and really not just independent, but independent from all those things that you want to be independent from.
Yeah. You know, and it's the timing of everything is kind of worked out well, because it was, you know, the most of the footage maybe it led up to like something like All In, where, you know, the biggest independent show in the world, and they didn't really, when they took on the project and when they came up with the idea, they didn't really know, we couldn't predict the boom of an independent wrestling show drawing 10,000 fans, but that's what it led up to. So it kind of shows the budding beginnings of the independent wrestling boom. And now, you know, independent wrestling's thriving and, you know, people are making good money and full-time livings just being independent in their own, you know, kind of the real DIY, the real do-it-yourself out there aspect of, you know, an art form, you know, and it's kind of like the world is kind of getting an idea of not just independent wrestling or, you know, a bigger fan base, but, you know, with like stuff like social media now, we get to see more independent arts, whether it's wrestling or movies or music. You know, like the world is in a sense getting smaller now that there's all these different avenues to get, you know, these stories out and these, you know, and these people and these, you know, people building their reputations and namesakes on, you know, just doing it themselves. And, you know, it was kind of the time, like I said, the timing was really cool because we got to, kind of see the boom happen.
You're someone who's kind of fascinating to me. I've seen you wrestle a whole bunch. I have a kid who's just a huge fan of yours. The conventional wisdom in a wrestling character is that, you know, it's exaggeration. It's a, you know, elaboration upon your real personality. But in meeting you and, you know, getting pictures of my son, you're very different out of the ring than you are in the ring. How did that develop for you? I've heard you say you do what works, but how did it develop where your character was so different than who you are?
Yeah, and I don't really think that's too common. I mean, there's a lot of people who play characters that aren't really them, but most of the time wrestlers are just kind of themselves. But like the catchphrase of it is, "Oh, this is me," but turn the volume all the way up. But to me, it's really I'm really kind of stepping out of myself to play a character, and you know, it's kind of been a process over time. You know, I'm outside of the ring, I'm pretty shy and introverted. And you know, I kind of grew up like that. And when I started wrestling, you know, it was really hard for me to like emote and like, you know, kind of show personality. And, you know, and I came to a realization when I was like, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years in that this isn't going to work unless I can figure out a way to step out of my comfort zone. And, you know, and luckily maybe being placed in, you know, living in Los Angeles, growing up in Los Angeles, it made it this easier for me. But, you know, I started taking some acting classes and I started, you know, studying how, you know, these actors take on these roles and how they do it. And it really, really, really kind of clicked in my head about how, you know, you can just literally portray something that's more of an idea in your head than, you know, the actual self. And, you know, and it just worked out for me. And then a lot of trial and error over time. You know, I've been wrestling for 19 years now. So it's just like a lot, spending a lot of time focused on my work, you know, that I've been able to kind of come up with a personality that, you know, isn't necessarily the real me, but still isn't so transparent that the fans see through it.
It reminds me a lot of Steve Martin, you know, who was this wild and crazy guy who had this very over-the-top, almost childish humor. But if you read his book or you hear him talk, he's very serious about it. He's very well thought about it. He really takes it deliberately. In your seriousness, in your shyness, have you been very deliberate with your character, or is it something that took place organically?
No, I would say I put a lot of thought into it. Again, in that similar context, you know, people might see what I do in the ring and, you know, think that I don't take it serious, or that, you know, that I'm just some goof who goes out and, you know, does his penis stuff or whatever. And that's okay. I mean, that's the perception I want people to have, because I want people to feel they're connected to the person I am in the ring. I want them to feel, you know, the sympathy or the anger or the hatred or, you know, or the love that the character is feeling at the time. And that's where the connection is made. And that's how you maintain, you know, a personality gets over and, you know, you build a career. But it is something that, you know, I take very serious, and I do put a lot of thought and effort into it. And the fact that some people think I'm so carefree is just a testament to how much work I have put into, you know, stepping outside of myself and becoming this character.
Now with, of course, we're talking to Joey Ryan, and This Is Wrestling is coming out this year. And that's why I wanted to talk to you, because we're talking to kind of the real you. And then I think the compelling thing about the film is to show, you know, the real person in this, you know, growing and emerging world of independent wrestling. This Joey Ryan character, this that you said has evolved, that you've taken chances on. You said you try things out. If it doesn't work, you try something else, and you think about it a lot. You know, reading up on you, you know, it said who your influences are. But very early on, I see, you know, a lot of like kind of Tully Blanchard and Gino Hernandez, kind of old school heel stuff, kind of mixed up with like a Rick Rude type thing. Did you take influence from wrestlers, or was this something you just came up with in your own head as far as this character?
So, you know, I have three older brothers, so I started watching wrestling at a very young age. You know, so I became hooked on 80s wrestling, and so when I started wrestling myself, and I think a lot of people fall into this trap, is you feel like you have to wrestle, you know, the same way or the same style or the same look as the wrestlers who are, you know, contemporarily successful, that, you know, if you want to be successful yourself, you know, because that's what's in the mainstream. But once I figured out that, you know, wrestling is kind of, you know, a blank canvas and you could paint any picture that you want to, I decided that I wanted to be a wrestler that I grew up watching, you know, a wrestler, you know, this type of wrestler that made me fall in love with wrestling, you know. So I picked things out of the 80s that I liked. You know, I grew out the chest hair, I grew the mustache, you know, it wasn't necessarily one wrestler specifically. It was the era of wrestling that I became a fan in that really influenced the kind of wrestler. You know, I purposely started throwing, you know, 80s style punches instead of strong style strikes, you know, which was very popular at the time. You know, so I tried to mimic what I saw then, and, you know, luckily for me, it was able to catch on and get over it, and I was able to sustain it and, you know, market it and become a successful independent wrestler.
This documentary, is it focused a lot on, you know, you know, of course, we hear about whatever the backlash, but also the intergender wrestling. Do you guys touch on the intergender wrestling and that kind of scene going on?
Yeah, we definitely do, because, you know, a lot of the focus is me and Candice's, Candice LeRae's teaming, which is, you know, obviously all intergender. You know, there's different schools of thought, and there's not, and I think with all things of wrestling, there's no real right or wrong answers to it. and you know, maybe my influences of, you know, more 80s style wrestling, and even, you know, early 90s style, and the fact that I did take theater classes and acting classes to become the character I am today, that I look at wrestling as more of a theater than, you know, closer to theater than sport. So, you know, I compare it more to movies than, you know, boxing or, you know, Olympic style wrestling. So I don't really see gender as having as much influence or impact on how you portray a story in the ring. You know, you watch superhero movies, or you watch, you know, Star Wars, or you watch anything, you know, anything like that. And, you know, they have strong female leads, characters, fighting men, and you don't think twice about it. And that's kind of how I look at wrestling. I don't really look at it as a tale of the tape, so to speak, where, you know, it would be silly for a 5'3", you know, 110 pound woman to fight a 6'2", 240 pound guy. You know, I don't really see those dynamics as having much. I mean, you don't throw those out, but you use them to tell the story. You know, maybe a woman can't go strike for strike, or, you know, blow for blow with a, you know, a man that's much bigger than her, but, you know, she can use momentum or her speed, or, you know, use his own, you know, errors against him. And you could tell the story that way. I don't really think putting limits on the stories you tell in wrestling is a good way to grow as an industry.
Well, when you're not with Candace and you're doing these one-on-one matches, it's very different from the historical thinking of intergender wrestling, where, you know, the Andy Kaufman and the man overpowering the woman, and then maybe, you know, the Billie Jean King moment, you know, where physically they can hang. But you with your the Joey Ryan thing, the sexual component of it, you know, it's almost the ultimate in women's empowerment, because they're overcoming not just the physical, but the emotional and the sexual kind of innuendos. Do you feel like you're kind of breaking ground in the way that you approach those intergender matches?
You know, I definitely, when I do the intergender stuff, I definitely try to make myself as villainous as possible, because I think it tells a more compelling story. You know, the more odds that, you know, of my female opponents can overcome, you know, I just feel like that's a stronger story to tell. But, you know, it isn't necessarily, like I said, there's no science to it. There's no strict rules to how it applies, but, you know, I just think the more I can give them to overcome, the more complete story I can tell, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Do you see, like, your eloquent championing of intergender matches? And I've seen it on Twitter, I've seen it elsewhere ways. You know, in wrestling, if you're going to present women as being equal to men in every way, and it doesn't take place a lot in sports, wrestling's probably the place to do it. But it seems when you're defending it, you're kind of defending more than that. How do you see the intergender criticism being kind of a microcosm of society, if that's not too weird a question?
I mean, it definitely is. And it's just, you know, that can be, you know, a lot of people's environments. It could be a lot of people's, you know, upbringings. It could be a lot of people's mentalities that, you know, have this block where, you know, they can't see the equal, you know, the creating equal moments. And, you know, it's frustrating at times, but people only know what they know, or they can only understand what they understand. You know, it's, you can argue it all day long, but unless somebody's willing to have an open mind, you can't change their opinion. But I look at it as, again, you know, wrestling being more theater, like, for me anyways, is that, you know, we're living in this make-believe world, and you know, for me, I dare tell a woman that she can't even pretend to be my equal in a make-believe world. You know,
right,
what I mean? So,
right, exactly.
You know, like most of the time, women struggle finding equality in everyday life in real situations, and now we're living in, you know, in a make-believe world, and, you know, I don't want to also, you know. Have them have to deal with that struggle.
I think you've said several times that you see wrestling as theater. Theater more than amateur wrestling. You know, you took acting classes to develop the things you were going to do. Did you have trouble taking that veil down for the movie, for This Is Wrestling?
Not necessarily. I'm not a big proponent of, I guess, kayfabe in the traditional sense. I think in this day and age, it's almost insulting to fans to like pretend that they're not smart enough to understand what's going on. So I try to give, you know, some, and you know, it's not necessarily something they want to, and I don't want to put that on anyone, that they necessarily want to know the inside world of wrestling, or they don't, you know, maybe they enjoy wrestling more if they just, you know, if they imagine it as being more real than it is. And I don't want to take anyone's enjoyment away, but I also feel like fans, at least the ones that I've had to deal with, or the ones that I've gotten to know, or the ones that I see on my Twitter feed, I think they're smart enough to separate real life from what they see on television, or what they see on video, or what they see, you know, on the internet. So I just live a world where I, you know, don't really, you know, consciously make an effort to be something I'm not when I'm not on screen. You know, people might criticize me for, you know, doing, you know, bringing down that veil. But at the same time, I don't necessarily feel like it's that important to what I do, at least to keep that mystique up.
How much reservations do you had about showing the real you, and not just the veil of secrecy of professional wrestling, but, you know, no longer playing the character and showing everybody who you really were behind the man?
Not really. I mean, like, you mentioned my tweets earlier. Most of my tweets are already the real me. Occasionally I'll throw up, like, you know, a sleazy tweet just to kind of like play off the character. But I think that's also tongue in cheek, and people understand that that's not the real me. I think, you know, when you watch me wrestle, I never come out and blatantly, like, you know, say that I'm something I'm not, or that I'm pretending. You know, even the something as, you know, the penis slip, my character never treats it as a joke, never treats it as if it's quote unquote fake. To him in the ring, it's very real. And I, you know, it's my pedigree, or my Stone Cold Stunner. You know, like, I need my opponent to grab me by the penis so I can flip them and win the match. My character is very serious about hitting his move. So, as ridiculous as that sounds, you know, me in the ring from bell to bell will never treat wrestling as if it's, you know, just a big made up world. But outside the ring, I'm very okay with identifying it as that.
You know, it's funny, I didn't think about that, but it's very true. You know, he takes it seriously, you take it seriously when you're in there. You know, you took acting lessons, you get really deep in the subtext of it. Like, do you know what he has for breakfast, or why he does what he does, or what the motivation is, or any of that? Or are you just kind of playing it on the surface?
I don't know if I go as deep as, like, you know, the what's for breakfast. But when I do seminars, and, you know, people ask me questions, you know, about, you know, wrestling techniques, you know, I tell them, you know, I could sit here all day and tell you how to properly do a headlock and a headlock takedown and an arm bar and all this scientific wrestling stuff. But if your character doesn't know why they're doing it, or if your character isn't somebody who would do a headlock takedown, then why would you even be doing that? You know, it's hard for me to do a seminar, because I want to know what the motivations are. You know, like, if your character doesn't need to do certain things, or if your character might even be hurt by doing something scientifically correct, you know, like, if your character is a bumbling drunk, then why is he going to know how to do an armbar, you know, or whatever the person is. So I think it's very important for someone to identify what their character is and what their motivations are, in order to capture an audience, and so the audience can see and feel the emotion. Because I think, you know, the audience, again, I give the audience a lot of credit, and I think they can see through somebody who's faking something, or somebody who's not committed to character.
So, you know, I think it's very important for wrestlers in general to identify the motivations of their character in order to execute properly in the ring.
Motivations are interesting, you know. It's kind of framed in the trailer for This Is Wrestling, which I encourage everybody to check out on Joey's YouTube and also Joey Ryan Doc on Twitter. That a bit of it focuses on the backlash, you know, against you. And it's an interesting thing to me, you know, because, you know, we know the People's Elbow and Socko and the Worm. And I'm wondering if you think that maybe, you know, like the theater of the mind that you do in the ring, it's not an outlier as far as suspending disbelief. Do you think the backlash has to do with kind of more about people being uncomfortable with the sexuality involved, you know, doing that in, to a predominantly male audience? Do you think that's a more of a factor than the actual act itself?
It could be. And it's a, and it is a fine line. And that's something that I consciously know when I go into the ring. You know, I know obviously the penis is a sexual organ, so there's sexuality already connected to it. But I try to, you know, I try not to sexualize what I do in wrestling. Like, my character will never get off by having an opponent grab him by the penis. It's specifically so he can hit his move.
It's clearly a weapon, right?
Right. So as soon as I make it sexualized, then there's a whole different context to it. But as long as I keep it, you know, as a weapon, or, you know, as a motivation to win a match rather than motivation to take pleasure in, you know, and it's a fine line, and sometimes it's difficult, and sometimes, you know, people that I wrestle, opponents I wrestle, want me to cross that line, and it's, you know, I have to explain to them that as soon as I do that, then, you know, it's no longer, it changes the context of it. You know, it's funny you mentioned your 16-year-old son, and I find that a lot of, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, I could never show my kids this or whatever, but I feel like those people, you know, don't necessarily, maybe they're speculating if they had kids, because, you know, I feel like my biggest fan base is, you know, the 12 to 17 year olds, because those are the ones that, you know, laugh the hardest at a penis joke. But as soon as you sexualize it, then all of a sudden it's taboo. So I try specifically not to sexualize it, because, you know, the penis can be funny, or the penis can be, you know, the penis can be, you know, used to create that kind of juvenile humor, and you know, and people are okay with it. But if you cross that line and make it sexual, then it becomes something different. You know, I think, you know, what I do in wrestling is actually tame compared to stuff like South Park, you know, and, you know, I don't think I do anything that crosses a PG-13 boundary. And I do that consciously, because I don't want to make it awkward is what I guess I'm trying to say.
You know, it's funny, cause like the reactions and stuff, and I've seen where, you know, people have said, you know, it's inappropriate, but it says more about those people than it does about you. Cause really you do have that line. It's almost like you slant it from PG-13 to PG rather than R. The thing about the kids, I work with kids, and this generation today, the 12 to 17 year olds, not only do they think it's funny, but they get it. You know, they're post-ironic, so they get it. They think they get that it's tongue in cheek. When I see you go to the ring, yeah, I've watched a lot of you today on YouTube, and I've seen you wrestle a lot. There's always like 10 guys kind of glaring a hole through you as you walk to the ring. Is there a part of you that enjoys pressing those buttons?
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of times I get, and more than not, and probably more than anybody realizes, I get audience members who will come up to me after they watch me live, and they'll be like, man, I saw your stuff on the internet, or I heard about it, and I just didn't get it. And then I saw you live, and it changed my opinion of you. You know, that's very rewarding when I get that, you know? But yeah, it is kind of fun to be able to push people's buttons, and, you know, but I think when it comes to it, down to it, you know, as long as I keep certain boundaries, I'm not really offending anybody. It may be, maybe people who like to pretend to be offended, but I don't think I'm actually offending anyone.
Or, you know, people that might need to get out of the house a little bit sometimes, you know?
Maybe, yeah. You know, maybe that. Some people like to complain, and they complain about everything, and that's what makes them happy. And me and me being something that they can complain about is another way that, you know, is actually rewarding for me, because now I'm, if they're a complainer and that's what makes them happy and I'm giving them something to complain about, then my wrestling is working, you know?
The name of the show is Total Engagement, and it's about, I want it to be about wrestlers like yourself, you know how to engage the audience in a wide way and to use the 2019 techniques to create characters. You're an independent wrestler, and somehow people all around the country found out about you. You know, you had a YouTube channel, you know, before Zack Ryder did, you know, you were ahead of your time with that. The first time I ever saw you was at WrestleCade, walking around with a camera. You still stay very busy. You said that you overbook yourself on purpose. Is that kind of out of fear? Is the fear still there from the old days of struggling and not wanting to take things for granted?
Yeah, you know, definitely. I actually had this conversation today with somebody who's a hairdresser, because they're also a freelance worker, and they know that I had the injury in November, you know, where I had a partial tear in my pec, and I had to cancel a series of bookings. And, you know, even though, you know, it didn't, you know, even though, you know, I was still making money in merchandise, I was still making money, you know, through other means in professional wrestling. You know, they said that they could sympathize with me not being able to enjoy the time off, even though, you know, I had to take pretty much 3 months off of bookings. You know, I still did selective appearances, you know, where I did the thumb wrestling bits, or, you know, I did like the guest hosting or guest refereeing spots, because the character lends itself well to just to being on the show, whether it's in a wrestling capacity or not, which is another blessing for me. But, you know, the fact that I had, you know, limited bookings for 3 months, which was probably my, you know, probably a good rest for me, probably good, but it was very hard to enjoy it, or very hard to, you know, because again, there's that thing where, you know, if I'm not working, I'm not getting paid. So, you know, it's a little bit scary still, you know, so, you know, just to feel, you know, I guess, clear in my head, you know, or have that, you know, the overbooking is kind of a necessity just to have that peace of mind.
In the documentary, you know, there's a great shot of you, at a table while people are walking by at your merch table. Like, I always see you. Sometimes you don't see everybody, but you always see Joey Ryan, and you talked about money. You talked about business. As people going from young adults to older adults, at some point we have to take our passion, if we turn it into a business, and we have to be smart about it and become businessmen. When you made that turn, you know, from just this artistic passion endeavor, funneling into kind of a smarter business sense, did that correlate to maybe changing your style in the ring? Because you kind of went to a, you know, I don't want to say safer, but you went to more of a theatric style. Or do those things correlate at all, or are they independent of each other?
I mean, maybe subconsciously they did, you know, because it's kind of a weird realization to make where, you know, a lot of wrestlers, I think they tend to outthink themselves, and I think they always have to be, you know, creating new pieces of entertainment, I guess, or new ways of engaging an audience, as to where I kind of found that when you've established something and you're marketing it, that's what the fans want to see. So, you know, I don't really like comparing myself to other wrestlers, but, you know, imagine going to see Scotty Too Hotty wrestle and he doesn't do the worm, and you'd be like, what, where's the worm? Right. Why isn't he doing the worm? And that's something he's marketed, and that's something that he's become known for. So in a sense, it's the safer style, or the, you know, the more conscious, character stuff is more because I don't want to disappoint the audience who may have heard of me on the internet, or, you know, seen clips of me, and they want to see what the hype's about. So I have to deliver the character stuff, you know, and sometimes I have to sacrifice cool moves or innovative offense in order to get the character stuff in, because that's what's keeping me over.
When it comes to, you know, your deliberation, you know, cause everything you're saying is so deliberate, and even on the business side, does that deliberation come with kind of, beginning with the end in mind? Are you that type of person where, you know, this whole time when you've been running around conventions with a video camera, you had an end goal in mind? And is that something you do now, where you are doing things trying to get that end point, or are you just following your instincts and just going?
I think a little bit of both. The initial idea behind, you know, the YouTube stuff was that, you know, when Candace and I started teaming, intergender tag teams weren't a real thing. I mean, you see them all over the place now, but, you know, I'm not trying to take credit for starting that, but they weren't a real thing when Candace and I started doing it. So for marketing purposes, you know, I wanted people to start thinking of me and Candace as one being, or, you know, as when you think of Candace, you think of me. When you think of me, you think of Candace. So we started the YouTube show so that way, you know, people would start to identify us as a team or identify us together, and it would become easier for us to market as a tag team. So that there was definitely an end game in that idea, but also just over time, you know, kind of rolling with the punches and not really having a set plan, has worked out well, you know, for a long time. You know, I had all these goals in mind and I wasn't hitting them and it was depressing. And, you know, once I stopped kind of making these goals or these things that I thought I had to have by a certain time, you know, I just started having more fun with it, and it actually ended up opening more doors and more opportunities that maybe I wouldn't have even noticed if I had certain goals in mind. So it's more of just becoming, I guess, having more of an open mind to different aspects and different ideas and different ways of doing business that, you know, is kind of kept me creatively flowing.
Because of the infrastructure you've created, you know, with, you know, the merchandise and then your character and kind of the style that you have, does it give you kind of security in your mind that you could really keep this going a long time if you wanted to? You don't have some limitations that other wrestlers with a different style and less, you know, of a marketing edge and less of a merchandise infrastructure could do? Is that something that gives you security?
It does, actually. And, you know, when the penis stuff first started going viral, I honestly thought, okay, cool, I can get like 2 or 3 months out of this. But that wave is still going, and, you know, and no pun intended, but it's still growing. And it's funny because I just did a show this past weekend and, Jazz was on it. And, you know, maybe I've met her before, like as passing acquaintances, but when I saw her, she was like, "Oh, you're the penis guy." And I, yeah, you know, she's like, "Oh," and she like kind of laughed and smiled. And, you know, some people think that that's a negative thing, that that's how somebody knows me, or, you know, I'm the dick guy or I'm the penis guy. But I look at it as a positive because, you know, the longer I can keep this going, or the longer I can, you know, establish myself as that, means that, you know, at some point I won't be able to go in the ring, or at least as much, but there's conventions and signings I can do. And if people know who I am, it's a lot easier to get those bookings, you know. And if my calling in wrestling, or if my lot in life is to be the penis guy, you know, so be it, because that's going to keep me, you know, that's going to give me notoriety, and that's going to get me, you know, through those times where my wrestling slows down.
In a way, what you were saying earlier about, you know, playing the bad guy when you're in intergender matches, it's actually going to kind of work even better for you as you get older, right? You know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, any way you can find notoriety, especially because, you know, like now I'm paying more closer attention to, you know, when I do conventions now, the signings, and, you know, who has the big lines and who has, you know, who's at all the conventions, you know, and you know, I see the, and it's mostly character people and people who want, you know, pictures with, like, oh, it's this guy who did this one thing that he's known for. And, you know, those are the ones that people want pictures with and wanted autographs from. You know, it's not necessarily the guys who are having the best matches, but it's the guys who are more colorfully known. You know, so there's that to think about too.
We know your time's valuable. We just have a couple of questions for you. Of course, this is Joey Ryan. This is Wrestling Documentary being released this year. Just a couple more questions, but before I get to that, it's for sure being released this year. Any kind of range date as to when that's going to happen?
We're talking about doing a few screenings, possibly WrestleMania weekend in New York, maybe at Double or Nothing in the StarCast in Las Vegas, possibly the San Diego Comic-Con. We're gonna screen it at some festivals. You know, and hopefully it'll get picked up by, you know, a streaming service at some point. But there's no, like, we're going to ride the festival circuit out for a little bit before we actually have, like, a public release.
A goal of this has to be to find the audience outside of wrestling, right? This isn't a documentary for fans who already are engaged and know about it. This is more to kind of show everybody else this really fascinating world, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of aspects about independent wrestling in there that people don't really know about. It's funny because obviously the penis stuff has become so second nature to me that I didn't even think about it as being something weird or something that's not, you know, that's something that's outside the box. So when I watched, I recently watched the documentary, sat down and watched the completed documentary, and it was like, it was weird because I didn't even think about like the penis stuff aspect of it. I was just like, oh wow, this is cool stuff that not everyone gets to see. And then I realized that a person who's not a wrestling fan or not familiar with me, they're going to see the penis stuff and be like, what am I even watching? But I think that plays well to it because that shows that really anything's possible in this world. Which is something that I think is helping the independent wrestling boom right now, is the fact that you don't know what to expect. There isn't necessarily a script or creative or writers. It's kind of like at every turn there could be something new.
You know, I joked at the beginning of the show that you might be the world's last independent wrestler at this point because of the frenzy going on in a way. And you've of course been closely tied to Elite Wrestling, you know, with being the Elite and your legendary appearance at All In. Your approach, given your success, given the hard work you've put in, given the independence that you developed in yourself, could you ever see yourself signing an exclusive contract with someone like All Elite or anybody else?
I mean, the cliche thing is never say never. I am currently under contract to Lucha Underground, but that's not an exclusive deal. Obviously, I still can keep my independent bookings. It's weird because, like, I think about, you know, on Lucha Underground or even on MLW, which, you know, I've been on, or Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, these TV shows that I don't really do. Like, I'm still a sleazy character, and the character plays without the penis stuff. But obviously, when stuff's shot for TV, the penis stuff is a little bit too outside the box. So at times I think about, well, it would be nice to have a steady paycheck. It would be nice to go somewhere where, you know, where like I don't have to hustle for my own bookings, or I don't have to agent my own travel or whatever it is. But, you know, I also think about my audience that I've built and the fact that, like, you know, yeah, you know, I'm not struggling for work and I am doing fine. And would it be almost irresponsible of me to kind of give up this market that I've cornered for myself to go somewhere where I'm not really allowed to do these creative stunts that, you know, that have kept my passion going or kept my audience growing. So it is something to think about. I mean, until an offer is put on the table where I actually have to sit down and think about it and weigh the pros and cons, I don't really know which way I would lean, but, there's a lot of things to think about.
Purely hypothetically, if litigation with Lucha Underground works out in your favor and, weighing all the checks and balances of your independence versus the security, what you've put into it versus giving some of that up, with what you've seen with All Elite Wrestling, is that, you know, and of what you know from the inside, is that the culture they've developed really taking... embracing and accepting and inviting the creativity of wrestlers, is that something that they've created that hypothetically would appeal to you more than maybe other things that have existed in the past for you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, having close relationship with Cody at the Young Bucks is definitely, something that would weigh in the pros side of the pros and cons. But again, you know, I've strived so well and thrived so well just being able to, you know, kind of roll with the punches and with, you know, I know the long-term goal of All Elite, you know, is, you know, episodic television, which is definitely going to need writers because you're going to have storylines that pay off and, you know, or you can't just have chaos all the time. I guess ECW kind of lasted for a little while with just kind of having chaos, but, you know, it wasn't really, that marketable outside the hardcore wrestling audience. So, you know, it's hard to say. I don't know if the character of Julia Ryan really fits in the context of walls and regulations. But again, those guys being my friends and me having full trust in them, if they had an idea for me, if they had something in mind for me, then, you know, I might lean towards trusting their opinion.
I have one more question for you. Of course, you know, This Is Wrestling is coming out this year. There's going to be some screenings, so make sure to check it out at Joey Ryan Doc on Twitter. Of course, follow Joey Ryan online. But I have to ask you this, as a musician and as someone who's worked in wrestling a little bit with music, how in the hell did you pick the Pina Colada song? It's the best intro song ever. I love it when I see you do it. How did you pick it? And how do you feel about that as the Joey Ryan song when it's available for you to use?
It's kind of, so I started doing these shows. Actually I have shows this week, called Lucha Vavoom. They run quarterly in Los Angeles. They've been around since 2002. It's a hybrid show of lucha libre, burlesque dancing, and stand-up comedy. It's probably the best kept secret in wrestling, because the shows are very, very much a live experience, and they run, you know, every February. So, you know, in the summer they run Valentine's Day shows in February. They run summer shows. They run Halloween or Cinco de Mayo shows, and they run, I guess I did that backwards, they go Valentine's, Cinco de Mayo, summertime, and then Halloween shows themed. They usually run 3 days, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, middle of the week. They sell out the Mayan Theater in downtown Los Angeles every single night, which is like 2,000 people. And it's just, they're super fun shows, and they're just way over the top. And when I started doing the shows in 2007 is when I joined on, they picked the Pina Colada song for me. And I was, but you know, on my independent shows, I was still using other stuff. But I would absolutely have the most fun on my entrance at those shows. And for whatever reason, it didn't click in my head to start using that everywhere. I thought it was kind of like, I didn't know it would work really. I didn't know people would get behind it. And then in 2015, which is, gosh, 8 years after I started doing Lucha Vavoom, I went to Japan. I went to DDT Pro in Japan, and they asked me, what do you want to use for your entrance music? And I thought everybody's coming out to some, you know, heavy metal riff, or every, you know, all these people are coming out to these, you know, these high energy songs. And I thought, what would stand out better than me coming out to the Pina Colada song? So then I decided to use it at DDT Pro in Japan, and those entrances started being super fun. And I was just like, you know what? This is just my entrance music everywhere now. No question about it. Okay. And yeah, so it was really something that was chosen for me. And it just took me 8 years to figure out that it was the best thing for me.
Yeah, it's great, because it's got, you know, the subtext and the message and the lyrics. It's a fantastic song, and it works for you. It's different. Different is good, and you're different. It's worked for you. And of course, everybody check out This Is Wrestling. It's coming out soon. And Joey, if people want to find out your bookings, do you have a place to go besides your Twitter? Or
so, yeah, I mean, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, I'm on all those stuff, and I'm pretty active on them, and I, you know, and I talk with fans, and I talk with promoters on those. You know, I have an email address, it's in the bio of all my social media, if promoters want to contact me for work. But yeah, I mean, I stay pretty active on social media, so that's probably the best way to find me. And of course, prowrestlingtees.com/Joey Ryan for my merchandise. Is a good way to find my t-shirts and my action figures and my hats and my different various stuff I have on there. So I guess you can find me a lot of places.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of those t-shirts in this house for sure. And I'd like to thank you very much for joining us on our debut episode of Total Engagement. Joey, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great weekend and a great week.
I hope you do as well.
Total Engagement.
You know, I thought that was a really good interview. I really wanted to get behind the Joey Ryan persona, and it wasn't hard to do because he's so different than his character is. And that brings us to a close for Total Engagement. Thank you for joining us. We'll go ahead and hit you up with all that merch stuff and all that, you know, the Twitter and all that. hit you up with that next week. I just wanted you to enjoy this show. Thank you so much for joining us. Those of you wide-ended fans who got the show on your feed, thank you for being fans of Wide-Ended. We hope you enjoy the new podcast. New fans of the show, new listeners of the show, thanks for listening. We're going to do something a little different every week here on
Total Engagement
with me, Matt Coon. Man, I hate to go. It's really fun to talk over this song. Man, what a groove. We'll see you next week. Total Engagement with Matt Coon. Tell your friends. Drink a pina colada.